Good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to all our listeners all over the world to Miracle Hour with John Campbell. And it's a great pleasure to be with you again. I'm now back in England after an amazing 10-week visit in Guatemala. And for those of the listeners who haven't yet visited Guatemala, I do highly recommend it, especially those people who are interested in the Mayan history. It's a very, very spiritual country and beautiful people and the most staggering scenery I've seen. And it's well worth a visit, and especially for those folks in the States, it's not too far to go. And I want to thank our wonderful guests there, Martita and Paco Ochoa, who lead the Course in Miracles down in Guatemala and are doing so much work in teaching that down in that area. So a big thank you to them, and send them our love. And it's good to be back in good old England here and just getting used to the temperate change. And tonight I've got a very, very interesting guest, and her name is Jacqueline Lloyd. And Jackie shares a passion of mine, which is the Indigo Children. And those of you who've listened to some of my previous shows will remember I talked a lot about the Indigo Children and about my desire to find a more appropriate type of education for these kids, for all kids really, because you know, all kids have got this. And that's what led me to the school in India, and you know, some of my guests that have been on were people from the school in India. And I think I first started to see what I saw as a difference, and obviously there's no one better than anybody else, but I certainly noticed a difference in my own children, because we had a 10-year gap between our fourth child and our fifth child. And when our fifth child was born, a young lad, as he grew up, and his sister that came after him, there seemed to be a greater awareness about them, and they were coming out with pearls of wisdom. You know, at the age of eight, he was telling me, David was telling me the things that were wrong about his school and his schooling. And, I mean, he was spot on. So that's when I first started to get in, and I read the books, The Indigo Children and The Care and Feeding of Indigo Children. And it's hard to deny that there is a phenomena, you know. And the tragedy, of course, most of us will know, is that a lot of these children are not understood. They're being diagnosed as having disorders, when really what it is they're living in a disorderly world that doesn't match their vibration, really, a lot of the time. So the more people who, I feel anyway, the more people who we can get to understand, and it's not about criticizing people that don't know or don't understand yet. It's not about that, but it is about imparting knowledge to those people who are caring for these kids, either parents, families, or the educators themselves. And there are a lot of people doing excellent work to disseminate this information and coming up with programs, etc., which help these kids. And I'm sure Jackie is doing an immense amount of that herself. So it's a great pleasure to have you on the show, Jackie, and welcome to Miracle Hour.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. And what I'd like to do, first of all, is if you could give us our listeners a brief background, Jackie, into your kind of background, and then what led you to knowing about indigos and that kind of stuff. Just fill us in that in that respect, please.
Okay. Well, like anything that people do that has a lot of merit and a lot of soul purpose behind it, I was led down this path. Now, of course, when I look back, I see it as a very deliberate series of events. At the time, it didn't feel like it was a plan, but it felt random, but not at the same time. It didn't. So it was really fascinating. And I had a book written before 9/11, and it had to do with terrorism in the United States. And it was on an editor's desk when 9/11 happened, and it was so close to what happened, they had an issue with it. They pulled it, and they wouldn't even talk to me. So that sent me into a pretty dark, you know, depression, dark night of the soul, because I honestly felt like I could, avert it or something. I don't know what I was thinking, but I knew I was racing against time to get it published, and I lost the race. So in that moment of, you know, complete, what am I doing on this planet? You know, if not what I thought it was, what is it then? I just gave up everything, and I just said, you know, whatever, I'm just going to live my life and not try to, you know, do anything and not try to teach people who don't want to be taught or, you know, help people understand, you know, the extent of the manipulation that's going on. I don't know about England, but definitely in this country. And so I just lived my life, and my husband and I, we had a baby girl, and she was born, I was actually pregnant the year after 9/11. So that gave me something else to focus on, and the experience of being pregnant with a baby like my daughter, and she sounds a lot like your son, John, it really shifted my whole energy field dramatically. You know, she really taught me so much before she even got here, and now she's six, and she still teaches. I call her my master teacher. She teaches me every day, and she's phenomenal. And so I sort of realized as we started connecting with other moms and other children that she's not isolated, that it's actually a phenomenon, like you said. And when I go to volunteer in schools and I try to support these kids, especially the ones that are, as you said, not understood, I see them shut down, and that is the motivation. That's the part that really gets me, and that's the part where I want to offer my support and help the parents with whatever they need, you know?
And what particularly did you notice about your daughter, first of all, Jackie?
You know, it was sort of a gradual thing, and I was told by one of my teachers that for, you know, thousands of years there's been a prophecy regarding this time. I don't know if you're aware of the 2012, Mayan, right? That there would be a generation of children who came in that would assist in the transformation of society. And I always thought, well, that's great, you know, good, we need all the help we can get, you know, that's fabulous. But then when I really started being exposed to these children, they are wise beyond their years, there's no question. And what I find fascinating, too, is how they think organically. They do not think in a linear fashion. So people think they're scattered or distracted or any number of negative labels, and actually what they're doing is they're just thinking circles around everybody, you know.
Exactly.
And then they feel misunderstood, so they don't bother to correct and say, no, I actually know what's going on, thank you very much, you know, I'm just seeing it this way. And then they shut down.
And this is and it is a tragedy, I don't think that's too strong a word, is that to see these amazing beings of light, you know, who are full of life, and, you know, and then they go into a system. And again, I'm very pointed about not blaming or judging here. It's not done through any malintent or ill intent. I'm convinced of that. But it's just that there is not sufficient awareness or willingness to open the mind to new concepts. And they go in and they shut down. And this is the tragedy. And I physically, visibly see the difference in these kids once they get into the traditional system.
I do too.
And what did you do in your case? Did you homeschool your daughter? What's her name, by the way?
Allie.
Did you homeschool Allie?
No, actually, I thought about it, but she is very much her own person already, and I thought it would be too much of a strain on our mother-daughter relationship if I had to take on the role as her teacher, too. And frankly, I'm just not qualified. I didn't do well in math, you know. I certainly not well enough to teach anything. And so we are fortunate enough to have a public Montessori school in our community. And I went there and I checked it out and I fell in love. It's a fabulous place and it's public, so we do have to deal with a certain amount of bureaucracy and testing and stuff like that. But since it is a Montessori school, it has all those advantages as well. And she's happy there. So for now, it's good.
Well, I think that's the main thing, you know. It's about trusting their ability to know, you know, what they can handle and everything else, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
I think that the tragedy comes when they're forced into a system where they actually don't want to be there, but the parents, for whatever reason, you know, whether it's financial or whatever, or just lack of understanding themselves, you know, keep them there. I think that's when the difficulties arise. So what happened when you started to get interested, and then how did that develop into what you're doing today?
It was really seeing the kids shut down. That was what motivated me. It got me, I don't want to say crusade because that has a weird flavor to it, but it became very important for me to talk to as many people as possible to support them in whatever way they needed to be able to support their children, because that to me was so critical. And you know, I get a lot of different responses. Well, I've been doing this now for about 8 months now. I've been on the radio all across, actually the world too. And it's interesting, the various responses that I get. Some people are incredulous. Some people, accuse me of confusing just a regular, adolescent, rebellion that has not been addressed with this phenomenon, the indigo phenomenon. And I have teenagers too, and some of them they love what I'm doing, and I always ask them if they have any messages as well, that I could carry on and share with people. And one time a young man said to me that he liked taking the medication that they were giving him for his attention deficit disorder, because it helped him concentrate and accomplish his schooling. And I asked him, why he accepted the idea that he was broken, because he was brilliant and he was so smart and such a light being, and he had bought it. He had accepted the fact that there was something wrong with him and he needed to take this medication in order to function in our, already broken society.
Wow, that's incredible. And that's a great example of the tragedies, you see, because even though they are brilliant, and my own experience is the most important thing I've found and what I tell parents is that if you can see this in your child, the most important thing is make sure you get a support network of like-minded parents with like-minded children. Because you know yourself, Jackie, my experience is when these kids meet another one, it's like there's that inner knowing, they connect, and there's absolutely no communication problems, there's no interpersonal problems at all. Yet when they meet children who, again, not trying to make them different, but who are, less in awake and aware and more shut down, they feel isolated.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel that way when you were... Sorry, carry on. Yes. Did you feel that way as a child as well?
Oh, absolutely. 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 I mean, I think a lot of us doing this work, we were like one of the very early brigade, and I know when I was a child, there wasn't any awareness of this kind of stuff at all, but I always felt like an alien, if you like, and always felt I was too sensitive, especially for a male. And that's another one of the characteristics I've noticed. They are incredibly sensitive beings,
That's right, and I cannot emphasize that enough. Their sensitivity is what makes them aware of things that are not in the physical dimension. And people say, oh, they're extra psychic and they can, do all these wonderful things with their psychic powers. And again, that sort of makes them, at least in mainstream society, it makes them odd. It makes them almost freakish. And so I always say, look, they're just very sensitive, and so they're going to pick up on stuff that someone who is not as sensitive will just miss completely. It's not that they're some bizarre, genetic anomaly.
No, that's that. That's absolutely. It is the ultra sensitivity, and I can definitely relate to that when I was a child. And the book which I'm just completing now, which is called Addicts and Angels, it puts out a philosophy which I've come to believe that a lot of people who go down the road of addiction, alcohol addiction, drug addiction, etc., are often highly, incredibly sensitive beings who found that the physical world and all it took, encountered, this chaotic kind of, dysfunctional world, was actually too harsh for them, and that they didn't have any idea of how to handle it. And then once they found the power of these ingestives, which took them out of that, numbed the fear which they feel, because it's really a fear, that's my experience anyway, that, and then of course because they're ultra sensitive, alcohol and drugs have an even greater impact on them. So it becomes a vicious cycle. So I think there's a lot of correlation between people who go down the road of addiction and this hypersensitivity.
Yeah, that's I found that to be true as well. And I don't know how it is in England with the drugs that they've been giving the children here in the United States, having to do with attention deficit and those issues that they consider disruptive. And there's actually a tremendous amount of social pressure that goes along with this phenomenon, because the parents don't want to be told that their children are disruptive. And the children don't want to be singled out as being, you know, a problem child or disruptive. Mm-hmm. So the obvious solution at that point for everybody is just to medicate the child and move on. Now, I don't know how much work you've done with children who are on these type of medications, but it's like going from three dimensions down to one. It shuts them down so completely. And there are side effects, obviously, increased desire for suicide. I mean, just stuff, you know, random stuff like that. So I'm always saying that that's the last resort, and I really encourage people to find some other way to support their kids, you know, through this transition. Because once they get on their own, usually if they haven't been too scarred and too beat up, they do really well. They just shine. And the good news is there are a lot of very talented people like yourself, John, and very in tune and very determined and dedicated, brilliant people out there that are spreading the word and helping these kids too. So they may feel alone sometimes, but you know, we are pulling for them.
Yeah, and I think that's the very most important thing for them. And I guess the drug that's mostly talked about over here in England anyway, the one they use is Ritalin, which I guess is the same in the States. Is that correct?
That is correct, although that was that's sort of an older form of it now. They've moved on to the latest one, which I found completely stunning, is a schizophrenia medicine. And for some reason, they felt that the schizophrenia / bipolar extremes, those the medications that address those symptoms, would work for these kids as well. And I was, you know, stunned. I mean, I didn't, as a parent, I can't even imagine giving that to my child. So.
No. And Jackie, what I'd like to do, if I could, is to get you to share with our listeners some of the characteristics that you have found about these children. And if we start off, for example, and if you break it down to the physical characteristics, because one of the things that I saw, obviously, was I saw their eyes. You know, they've got these amazing eyes, many of them. But if you'd like to talk a little bit about what your experience is about the characteristics, the physical characteristics, and other aspects of their personality, which led you to understand these kids are, you know, something different.
Okay, well, that's an interesting question, John. What I've noticed, besides what we've already discussed, the extreme sensitivity and the ability to think organically versus linearly, their eyes, absolutely. Their eyes, they are filled with light. Those that have not shut down are filled with light. And they are often very much aware of what they're doing and why they're here, but they don't feel comfortable sharing that with a lot of people because our society, again, it's not something that's supported. And often they are set up to do something that is outside of the family norm or something that the family would not necessarily be keen on supporting. And of course they chose that family as for a reason, and they chose it to learn how to be independent and how to operate without people's judgments impacting them. So I try to soften the fear around it, because oftentimes when the children are honest with their parents and the parents get over the initial shock and dismay, then usually we can find a common ground to work forward from that point. But oftentimes the children's fear is what just paralyzes them, and they are just too afraid to talk to their parents. And then, of course, that leads to the drug use that you were talking about, the, you know, the illegal drug use to stifle the pain. And there's only so much that, you know, that we can do without involving parents at this point. And the more parents who talk to other parents and let go of the stigma, I think the better as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because that's the point, isn't it? It's about It's a very, very fine line, because I'm not a great lover of labels, but I sure prefer the label indigo than something that tells them that they're defective in some way, you know.
Absolutely.
If you've got to have a label. And tell us, if you could, Jackie, where this led you. What did you do? What did you... did you start to write about these children? Did you start to work with parents or children themselves? What happened?
It was almost like the process that led me to write my book. People just came into my life that needed the assistance that I was able to provide. And it was really a divine guidance thing for both of us. You know, I learned so much from supporting other people. Everybody taught me as I was supporting them as well. So it really is a beautiful synergy. And that's the part that makes this so fun.
Mm. Yeah. And do you run groups now, or what do you do with the children?
Not really, no. I mean, I'm still working with parents that are not completely embracing the idea. And there are some people who, of course, think that this is all baloney, and that, you know, I had a radio host very upset with me because she felt that I was doing children with attention deficit a great disservice. And she was very angry at me, and my first response was, you know, she said, "I'm an advocate for children, and I think this is a disgrace, blah blah blah." And my first thought was, well, what part is she an advocate for? The drugging part, you know, because that's a big part of what I say is that should be the last resort. And then I thought, you know, I'm learning this too. I'm as much in school as everybody else, and I would love to exchange information with her. And so I wrote her, and I said, this is a chance for me to learn your perspective, and I would love to talk to you privately so there's no public pressure or anything like that. And she never wrote me back, but the point was that I got past my own defensiveness to do that, and that's what I'm seeing in parents too. They're being pushed, and I have to feel like it's a divine plan, because these kids are pushing parents out of their comfort zone, and that's what the prophecy said they would do, and that's what's happening. So it's all pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah, and obviously teachers as well, because I think this is one of the reasons. I mean, over here there's a tremendous problem with mainstream education. You know, hundreds of parents taking their children out of school every month, doing homeschooling. We have a wonderful organization over here called Education Otherwise, which is an umbrella which supports parents who want to take their children out of mainstream education, but like yourself, don't feel qualified in whatever way to be teachers of their children. So they're encouraged just to join this organization called Education Otherwise, where the parents get together, and there's actually no pressure to put on formal teaching. They just understand the concept that the children will grow and learn. It's natural to learn. It's natural to want to learn, you know. But the challenge, I think, that the traditional system has here is that these kids are going to dig their heels in when they're forced to learn stuff they're not interested in.
Right. And unfortunately, a great deal of what we teach falls in that category. And I often ask parents and teachers, too, you know, how much of what you learned in grammar school and in high school, how much of that do you feel was relevant? How much do you feel supported you in your life? And how much do you use now? And usually the answer is very little. And so there's almost this unspoken, well, we had to suffer through this, so they do too. You know, it's almost just an acceptance of a system that needs to be shifted simply because we had to live through it. And so, you know, once they see that, once I bring that to their attention, they're usually, the shift happens really, really quickly.
Yeah. And I find that can be the biggest struggle, because if parents and teachers do start to accept this, that there's something that needs to change, and it forces them to have a look at their own education, just like you asked the question, you know, what actually did they end up using of what they were taught. It's often the first time they've really taken a microscope and examined the way they were educated themselves, and it can be quite painful, and it's not an experience which some people like to go through.
Right, and that goes in line with doing spiritual work as well. As you know from the Course in Miracles, spirituality is a challenge in a lot of ways, because it requires us to look at things that, you know, frankly, we'd probably rather not admit or look at in ourselves. And so I've found that people who are studying spirituality in one way or another tend to be more willing to explore this with me, because they already know that there's something more going on, and they are already willing to look at things and shift what needs to be shifted.
Yeah, well, that's definitely true. You know, if you can get people, and you know, I mean, there's a real explosion going on in spiritual awareness at the moment, and you mentioned 2012 and the Mayan calendar, you know, and I always like to encourage people to think about what's going to happen in 2012 is a very positive event. It's not a negative event in my book anyway. You know, in my mind, I think it's pertaining to the, it's not that the world is going to end in any drastic, terrible way. It's just the world as we know it is going to come to an end. That's what I believe. And the changes are going to be so profound through every area of society, you know, the political system, the education system, the financial system. These are all systems which up to now have been governed by control and fear, are gonna break down and change, because the love vibration is getting so powerful that you know, it's shifting that. So I think it's a very exciting time, and you know, and I find more and more people are open to these new concepts now.
It is
exciting.
Yeah. You know, I always am made aware of the fact that we create our own reality, and the same applies for the 2012. If people fear it, or if they worry, or if they project a negative energy toward that, then the experience they have will not be as positive as someone who is, you know, who has learned to flow with the changes and let go of things a lot easier. People who cling to outdated belief systems are the ones that are really suffering. And that's hard for me, too, because I want to support them, but at the same time, they don't want to be supported. They don't want to move away from their comfort zone because they're terrified. And, you know, I often think, too, I know you said that you don't think it's a deliberate misunderstanding of these children, but I can't help but think if we knew, you know, those of the light knew, for thousands of years that these children were coming, don't you think maybe that the people on the other side, and this is a planet of opposite polarities, I mean, clearly we have both in extreme on this planet. I you know, I often wonder, was there some plan put into effect starting maybe in the 60s that was going to affect how children were raised and how they were isolated by technology and stuff like that? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think the 60s was a profound time, because that was the time where a lot of us, you know, started to, you know, become activists in certain ways. You know, you had all the Vietnam War situation and people saying enough is enough with regarding that. I think there was an explosion of energy. I always like to think of things as energetic, you know. I think there was a burst of the love energy came through in the 60s, and it broke people out of the mold, probably for the first time since, you know, the 20s, really, I guess, was probably a time before then. But I think that it's been a gradual thing, you know, since then. And it's like the mass consciousness, you know, it's that tipping point thing, you know, the old 100 monkey effect, isn't it? You know, once it starts, people from all over the world can pick up on it, and it just feels to me now that it's a quickening. It's happening so fast now that I even wonder whether or not we're going to see this massive change even before 2012. You know, which could possibly happen. I don't know.
I don't know either. It does feel like the Earth is splitting, though, doesn't it? It's the extremes are getting more extreme, and people are finding each other. It's almost like a gathering as well. People who are on the same wavelength or of the same vibration or with a similar path are just finding each other. It is very exciting. And I always, when I was a kid, I was born in the 60s, so when I was a kid, I always said, hey, I'm here for the revolution. Where's the revolution? You know, because we had the 80s, and that was really boring, and nothing happened in the 90s, really, you know. So now I'm excited, because now I know this is why I'm here. And I'm not the only one who knows this. People all over are starting to realize this, and they're getting excited. You know, there is a moment of fear there, too, and an element of fear definitely in the media as well, and people who think it is, you know, evil or whatever to be talking about this stuff. But for the most part, it is a quickening, and the veil is thinning, and what we think we create so much faster in the physical than we have even a year ago. You know, almost makes my head spin how fast we can create. So I always encourage people to be very clear about the choices that they make, because we make choices every day that dictate what kind of a reality we're going to live in. And the nice thing about now, and this is almost like a graduation of humanity, is the way I think of it, we're being tested in a lot of different ways. And the nice thing about the quickening that you spoke of is that we can be almost immediately aware of what we created from which thought. So it's we're all getting a very good education.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right, Jackie. I mean, I think that's the big thing. And and it, for me, it's the toughest thing to keep remembering in every second. And, I mean, that's one of the things that I've felt such a great support with A Course in Miracles, because when one commits to a very heavy duty course of study like the course as it is, you know, you've had a look at it yourself, it takes a lot of commitment and a daily practice, but over a period of time it does really train the mind. And that's what the course is talking about, is you know, we have to really change our mind about everything, you know, and understanding the power of our thought, and that our mind creates everything there is, you know. And people are becoming more aware. And one of the things, I don't know if you've seen this, one of the things I'm finding is, it's interesting, isn't it, that there's an explosion of divorce around the world, excuse me, and I think, especially around people, you know, maybe more senior, you know, the older type people, and I think, and people changing professions, I think what's happening is, when we are not true to what is in our heart, if we're doing anything where the primary purpose is not love, in other words, if we're in a job where we're in just because, you know, of the money and et cetera, if we don't take the action to correct that and actually find something that we love, or there is an alternative, is to develop a love for what you're doing, you know, you can, there's a choice there. But if we don't do one of those two things, the universe takes over, and my experience is it gets tougher, not easier. And there was an interesting thing. I had a friend of mine who was in a job in a coaching capacity in a football team, and I saw him about 3 or 4 months ago, and I said, "Are you enjoying the work?" He said, "No." He said, "I'm really not enjoying it at all," you know. And I knew, I didn't say anything to him because he wasn't into this kind of thought process, but I knew from the moment he said that if he didn't quit, he would get fired. You know, the universe will do the job if you don't do it yourself. And sure enough, 2 months later, you know, he got fired. And I think that's what I'm seeing happening. People, if they're in a relationship that they're not really content of being in, or a job, or any part of their life where they're not being true to themselves, if they don't make a shift in some way, either start repairing the relationship or doing some work on it or whatever, things start getting tougher. They don't get easier. I don't know if you found that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, and you said it really well. The universe does step in if we don't take care of business, so to speak. And right now, I've noticed it's usually pretty swift and pretty dramatic, and it is resulting in people breaking up and people finding different ways to follow their heart. And it's, you know, there are always a lot of tendencies to do what was accepted in the family or what is acceptable in terms of society, but then they also have this inner yearning to do something completely different. And if they don't honor that, then they're just miserable, and there's always the sense that there's something missing, and there's this void where there should be something that's fulfilling, that fuels the soul and makes people feel like living is worthwhile, you know? I mean, it's a huge thing. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think because the thing that keeps people stuck in these situations is this guilt. And it's what I love about The Course in Miracles. The Course in Miracles recognizes that underneath every, you know, kind of dysfunctional system, whatever, is always this unconscious guilt. and the coursework, by doing the coursework, it, over a period of time, gets it clears all this unconscious guilt. And I think that you mentioned you'd read the book, The Disappearance of the Universe, and that's the book which really, Gary Renard's book, took me to study the course in depth. And, you know, the course is teaching is that the reason we're in a body here is to get rid of that, we've come in, is to get rid of that unconscious guilt, you know, and to live in joy. And the tool is forgiveness, you know, quantum forgiveness. So it's a very interesting path, and you know, all paths lead home. But I do feel that the releasing of guilt is the real prime importance, because everybody's been so guilt-ridden by the system that it's the one that we've got to break free of, you know.
Absolutely, because that guilt also translates into judgment of self and others, and the judgment is usually a very crippling type of judgment. It's very negative, and it's fed by the guilt, because if I feel like there's something wrong with me, then, you know, if I see something wrong in somebody else, then maybe I'm not as bad as I might be. Or, you know, don't look at me, look at that person, look how messed up they are, that sort of thing. So along with the guilt, it comes the judgment, and then that just divides people even more and creates more guilt. So it's just a cycle that continues. And getting people to break out of that is really tough. But the universe is definitely doing its part right now. Belief systems that are not supportive are being shattered, and that's not always pleasant. In fact, most of the time it's not a pleasant experience. The comfort zone that people have created is no longer that comfortable. Not that it ever really was to begin with, but it's becoming extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you think these, I mean, you know, there's the concept of indigo children and crystal children, then rainbow children, different levels of awareness. One of the things I think that I've noticed about the indigo children is, in addition to having this wisdom and this love and this sensitivity, they also have a very powerful warrior spirit. And they're the ones, they're the rule busters, if you like. They're here to actually break down old paradigms. That's what I find. Have you found that yourself?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm right there with them.
Yeah,
I've been waiting
absolutely.
For these kids for a long time. So, the old systems, they are broken. And it's really rare that I find somebody who keeps on insisting that there's nothing wrong with the schooling system, that it's all the kids. I would say I don't know how many people I've talked to, thousands of people, and really only two said that I was crazy and that, you know, the kids were just not being disciplined properly at home. And everybody seems to be wising up to the fact that the system needs to shift.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they've come in to do that. And have you anything that you found also about their eating habits? Have you found that a lot of these children understand that they are actually beings of light and they don't need to put in the amount of food into their bodies that most of society has been conditioned to believe they have to?
Actually, no, I have not run across that. My daughter is a little bit like that, but we tend to eat very healthy, in any event. But I've noticed the school lunches in particular. Now, she does go to public school, and I pack her lunch because I don't want her eating that garbage. The school lunches are very poorly thought out. They're very high in salt. They tend to have something that has a lot of sugar in it, and they eat this lunch, and then they're expected to go and concentrate for another 2.5 hours, of schoolwork. And the kids seem to be using the preservatives that are in certain products, and it's actually more products, more and more I'm seeing this in different things. America is a prepackaged society. We have a lot of convenience foods, quote-unquote, and the school lunches are built on that same platform. And it seems to me that the preservatives have a very detrimental impact on these children, and it's similar to the shutting down that happens with the Ritalin and the other drugs. So it's very interesting to me. I can see it after they eat lunch. You can see this gradual crash, and it's fascinating. And I know I'm not nearly as sensitive to preservatives as they are. So I can't help but think that's also another thing that they're here to shift as well. But they are also addicted to these preservatives. There's some way that the body craves that chemical, and so it's actually, you know, a fascinating and terrible thing all at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I mean, I totally agree that they have been, they've become addicted to it, and that they are sensitive to it. But I find that it's even just it's a sensitivity to so many foods. You know, there's almost a knowing in them that they are light beings. You know, and as such, have the ability to gain everything they need from another source. That's what is, you know, and there's a lot of people that have actually proved this theory, you know, and the breatharian movement, which of course again was ridiculed and not understood, but it's something that I looked into about 6 or 7 years ago, and I found it a very real possibility. And I think these children, this, you know, they have a knowing about who they really are, and I think that their spirit is what gets them into trouble with the authorities. And one of the things that I was mentioning about when I got interested in this, I did some research into education. I explained the school I found, and there's one in the United States. It's in Texas, in Austin, Texas, and it's called the Sri Atmananda Memorial School, and it takes its name from the mother school in India. And it's so fantastic, especially for these type of kids, because from the moment they arrive, there is absolutely zero coercion. The children are never coerced to do anything at all. The teachers are incredibly well trained to follow the child. So there's an innate trust in the child's innate desire to learn, which is innate. It's built into the human condition to self-actualize. They trust that the child innately knows what they want to learn and when they're ready to learn it. So the teachers are trained just to follow the child, and whatever the child wants to do, the teachers support them in finding that, and they encourage them to find information. And if they want to play, you know, at the younger years, they come in, they want to play all day long, they let them play all day long. And they never get the feeling that they're told they're wrong. You know, they come out, when you see the 18-year-olds that come out at the end, it's incredible. The level of self-esteem, the level of compassion they show for themselves and others, the level of understanding and real dedication to each other, and a real knowingness that they're all connected. And it's an amazing system, and, you know, I encourage you to, anybody who's interested, to take a look at their website, which is www.kpmapproach.org. And they run a lot of outreach programs now, letting other people know about their work. So that's something you might be interested in.
Oh, thank you. I wrote that down. I'm definitely going to look at that, because I always have my radar on looking for solutions and different ideas to present to people as possibilities. So that sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you're ever in Texas, you know, they're always welcome. They always welcome visitors. It's down there in Austin. It's a phenomenal experience, because you see these kids with incredible, I mean, the light coming out of their eyes and the self-esteem, and they have no fear of adults, no fear of authority, you know, which all of us were so conditioned with. It's, you know, we spent maybe 30 years in therapy trying to get rid of, you know.
Right, and everybody does. That's the funny part, you know.
Yeah. So what about the future, Jackie? What have you got on the drawing board, if you like, in the way of supporting these children?
I'm right now. I'm along with giving talks and working in the capacity that I have been. I'm also embarking on a new course of study myself that has to do with energy work and healing, and it's an ancient form of healing that addresses different meridians, not only in the physical body, but also the mental, emotional, and spiritual body. And it's a very, very difficult and complicated healing thing to learn. So it's going to take me a while, but my goal is to be able to learn different treatments that can assist the kids and support the kids and even the parents as well, because it blends the physical and the mental and the spiritual and the emotional, and it removes blockages through all of those different bodies to increase the flow of energy in a more holistic way. So I'm really looking forward to that. My first class is in November, and that is my goal. That is what I want to do with it. I want to help kids.
Yeah, and of course it is a mind body spirit thing, and I think that there's a place for help in all those different areas. And I think the other thing is, I don't know if you did you get to see the documentary, the Indigo Evolution, which James Twyman and the Emissary of Light made?
No.
That was interesting. I thought very well balanced documentary. It's well worth a looking at. It's called The Indigo Evolution. It is a documentary, so they actually interview parents, they interview the children, they interview educators, they interview healthcare professionals. So it's quite a balanced look, and you certainly see some of these amazing kids on there, and some of the work they're doing is incredible. And mainly because they've been allowed to have their natural talents validated, and they haven't been forced to do what they don't want to do, really. So that's when they blossom.
That's true, and that's what I love to see. It makes me so happy to see kids who are excited about life and excited about what they're doing and looking forward to tomorrow, as opposed to kids who are just going through the motions because they don't see the point. And frankly, you know, we don't either. We don't see the point either a lot of times, unless we've done our own work and we've put the pieces together, so to speak.
Yeah. And do you go to any of these conferences at all? Have you been to any conferences about these kids over in the States?
No, I haven't. I've been doing most of my work over the radio. Because of my six-year-old, I don't want to miss out on that either. You know, she's my only child, and she won't be six forever. And it makes me so happy to be able to spend time with her and to volunteer in the classroom and help with her schoolmates and classmates and support the teachers. That for me right now, that's where I need to be. When she's older and she doesn't need me as much anymore, or if she says, okay, Mom, I'm, you know, go away now, which probably will happen sometime when she's a teenager, then I will adjust and probably do more traveling. But right now, if I go, I take her with me.
Right. And what would you say to parents or teachers who are listening who have no experience of these children, maybe haven't even heard the term indigo children? What would you give them? What kind of advice or support or suggestions would you make to them if they came across these children and felt that they were sort of, there was something wrong with them, or that they were, you know, being arrogant, or what would you say to them?
Really, the thing that I try to remember too, because I'm human and I get triggered, by things as well, the main thing to keep in mind is to listen, and listen with an open heart and see what they have to say, and suspend judgment whenever possible. Suspend all personal guilt. Suspend personal pain. Don't project whatever pain you've been through on them, because they're probably not even talking about that. And just listen. I mean, the ability to listen, I think, is an art that we've sort of lost in this culture. And that's what makes the difference. When the children feel heard and respected and cared for in that way, then they're more likely to share their thoughts and feelings, and they're more likely to let in the adult support, because oftentimes they feel so isolated that they just shut off from everybody. But if they find somebody who actually listens and cares about what they have to say, it's just amazing how they open up.
That's right. Well, you're absolutely right, because that's the biggest thing. You know, it's one of the skills that we're not taught. And I know I went through a treatment program, and one of the first things they did was they sat us down and gave us listening exercises. You know, and it was a whole new ball game. You know, because I think often what happens as well is, if you have not been listened to as a child, which is very often the case, then when you become an adult, you have no experience of listening yourself, and you've got a double whammy. Because you haven't been listened to as a child, you want to do all the talking. And that's what I think happens in some of these cases, you know.
Yeah.
So listening to them, and anything else?
Letting them lead whenever possible. Like the school that you were talking about, and the various home education programs that are available to people. It just takes a little bit of research, and chances are pretty good there's a school nearby that can support you in whatever way is appropriate for the family. But letting them choose and letting them set the pace and letting them explore this world from an energy of support and unconditional love within the family unit is really all that, that these kids need. They don't need a whole lot of hand-holding. They don't need a whole lot of interference or, you know, direction. They've got all that inside of them. They just need the green light and the support and the unconditional love. So I would say whatever the child expresses an interest in, let them explore it. It doesn't mean it's going to become a lifelong passion, but it's definitely something that's on their radar screen, and then they should be encouraged to explore it because they know what they need.
Exactly. That's a great point as well, yeah. And it might be totally something which the parents or the teachers have got no interest in at all, and that should bear, have no bearing on the matter at all. They've got to get, it's about getting into the child's world rather than expecting the child to get into the adult's world.
That's perfect. Yep, that's exactly it.
That's the way I like to put it. And interestingly, I've just flipped open, because I normally have my course with me here whenever I do a show, and I just flipped open to a page, and I just, if I may, just share a paragraph that jumped out at me. And as you know, the book was dictated, you know, and it says here, a wise teacher teaches through approach, not avoidance. He does not emphasize what you must avoid to escape from harm, but what you need to learn to have joy. Consider the fear and confusion a child would experience if he were told, do not do this because it will hurt you and make you unsafe. But if you do that instead, you will escape from harm and be safe, and then you will not be afraid. It is surely better to use only three words, do only that. This simple statement is perfectly clear, easily understood, and very easily remembered. I think that's a beautiful paragraph about, you know, the essence of good teaching.
Wow, that was great. Thank you for sharing that with me.
Yeah, that is, and that's from Chapter 6 of A Course in Miracles, Section 5, The Lessons of the Holy Spirit, The Lessons of Love. And, of course, the Course talks a lot about the true teacher, you know, and that's one of the things which is emphasized in the KPM approach to children, the Sri Atmananda Memorial Schools. And I think that's one of the great things and why they are so, so successful in what they do. And, you know, it's been so amazing. We are already coming up to the end of our time here. We're just coming up to a couple of minutes we've got to run. I wonder if you, have you got a website you'd like to share with the listeners, Jackie, that they can go to and connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's JacquelineLloyd.com, and that's LLOYD, JacquelineLloyd.com. And I have a contact me button right on the front page, and I also have a list of different talks that I've done and a little bit about how I got involved and how I believe we can best support these children. And I'm also aware of the fact that I do not have all the answers. And if somebody out there has a feeling that I could really benefit from some knowledge, I really would appreciate the contact and the email saying, hey, have you seen this, or are you aware of this, or whatever. I certainly welcome any kind of assistance, support, because the mutual support is the key.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about, you know, not avoidance. It's about connection, not separation. You know, the whole of the Course in Miracles, as you probably know, is about getting rid of separation, understanding that we are all one. We're all here together, and basically whatever is happening to another is happening to ourselves. And we can all pull together, and if we all pull together, we find that everyone's got a little bit of knowledge that that can help the other. So I think that's a great way of looking at it. So I'll just repeat that there. Your website is www.JacquelineLloyd.com, which is JacquelineLloyd.com. And if people want to go on that website, they'll have a contact you button that they can hit and get an email or contact you that way.
Great.
Well, Jacqueline, it's been a great pleasure to have you on, and thank you for coming on and sharing your time and your wisdom and your experience with our listeners and with myself. It's been a great joy, and I certainly hope to link up with you sometime.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate it, and it's always nice for me to connect with somebody who sees everything so clearly. It was an honor. Thank you very much.
Well, that's great. Thank you. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful evening there in beautiful San Diego. I love it.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jacqueline. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.